Victoria Nuland is stepping down. She's going to be replaced. But when you look at her career during all these decades, what is her legacy?
A lot of bodies. I mean, a lot. She easily qualifies for the war criminal. And I mean, easily. I mean, she probably overtook even Madeleine Albright, who wanted to kill, 500,000 Iraqi children. And on her watch, it was almost accomplished. But Victoria Nuland went even further than that. And her legacy is the classic neocon. Utterly incompetent, utterly vile, and that's pretty much it. War criminal is just, could be stamped on her forehead, and that's who she is.
In your opinion, why it's happening right now? What's the reason? Do you see any type of reason behind this, or it's just happening?
It's neoconservatism. It is primarily driven by the not all, but she's a Jewish, that all those connections to the Eastern Europe, those people have visceral hatred of Russia and Russians. It is more than just, it's irrational. And it is also when you magnify this hatred by being in the positions of power in the United States, which they wrongly perceive as the omnipotent. You begin to have those people who are sociopaths, primarily so, and a huge level of narcissism. And as a result, they use American, whatever the toolkit United States has, like, for example, the military, which can fight third world countries. They leave their basically the trail of blood, suffering, misery behind themselves. But in this case, with Russia, it's irrational hatred. They hate Russians on racial, cultural, social, whatever the levels. And this is what drives basically this administration and other administrations. Plus, of course, we know that behind that is Obama. What? And so in this case, add here the a horrendous complex of inferiority he experienced, compared to Vladimir Putin. So a lot of things drive this. It's a combination of narcissism and being just horrible, horrible people, humans.
Do you think at the end of the day, US foreign policy is going through some sort of changes?
No, it's not changes. It's a catastrophe. It is a complete strategic catastrophe, which is due to sheer incompetence of people who drive US foreign policy. They are not experts in anything. And I'm on the record. Again, my fourth book is about it. My previous book is about it. Those people simply do not have the appropriate toolkit. Most of them are whiteboard academicians from their so-called elite making machine in whatever Georgetown, Ivy League, other places. And first, for example, American diplomacy or whatever passes for diplomacy in the United States already for decades now is the butt of the jokes among the diplomatic professionals around the world. They are not really diplomats. They are primarily conduits for the Washington's very often insane demands. That's the only thing they can do. Well, plus they do just basic bureaucratic things like issuing visas, a regular consular job. And they are, everybody knows who they are. So when you look at this and when you look on those think tanks, which provide all those, so to speak, ideas, which are primarily exceptionalist delirium, which think that the United States is just, I mean, the it thing, so to speak, you look at, as I already stated, utterly incompetent American elites in general across the whole spectrum of the statehood activities, be that military, be that politics, be that foreign policy, or what have you. And now it's became absolutely clear what is happening. And you know what? It was Ronald Reagan who brought neocons on board big time. With their idiotic idea, Straussian ideas. You then, of course, had Bill Buckley, who betrayed the conservative movement in the United States by framing conservatism purely in the Cold War terms of their, you know, communism against what have you. And as a result, we have the consequences of it, and they evidently ran its course, and Victoria Nuland is just one of many among those people who absolutely are not in their place. And they actually provided a huge damage to the United States, not to speak about the world outside.
So amazing to see how they could keep all this hatred against Russia, because before that they were talking about communism, Soviet Union. Since Putin took power, it's not anything similar to that regime that was before. It's not about communism, but they kept this hatred against Russia, and they have these people in charge. In your opinion, how they were able to do that? These are ideologues. These are people who are producing hatred toward Russia.
Well, for starters, you have to look at the American historiography, or history, if you wish, the field of history. Not just a Russian study field, which is completely saturated, infested with the people with the agenda who, you know, look at them, look at Max Boot, look at Julia Yoffe. They are, well, not all of them are Jews, but many of them are, and they just hate Russia. I mean, Julia Yoffe actually went on record, up to the point that the Atlantic magazine had to write a piece about this. She said that I hate Russia and I'm here to basically harm Russians. They love nothing more than seeing Russians die or crawl from hunger on their knees. This is the genocidal maniacs, most of those people. And they are accepted in the United States, so to speak, higher circles, because they are infested, not just only with the neocons, but those ideas of the exceptionalism. And when you look at the field of history of the United States, it's not real history. Much of it is confabulated. For example, like the U.S. victory, quote unquote, in the World War II. And the fact that, of course, that this is a classic case of stolen valor. They try to steal it from actually people who did defeat Nazism. And if you take a look, I mean, some exceptions here and there, they do not change the whole overall picture. And they were actually urging to fight Russia in some form. It was nuclear weapons of the Soviet Union which prevented them going against it. And to some degree, in some circles, granted that American military expertise is not very high, but in some military circles, they understood that conventionally they also cannot fight. And so when you look at this, it's a kind of coalescing into this whole thing from different pieces and bits of all kinds of the delusions, if you wish. And as a result, you have people who it's combination. It's combination. It's never one factor. So the hatred, for example, of Russians or whatever, you know, it's always, it has the constituent parts which have to come together. And when you look at this, I think, and this was my case that, you know, for a long time, I'm making this case. And as I already stated, you know, I wrote books. There is a complex of inferiority towards Russians. They cannot go out and say that conventional, in terms of conventional war, in terms of the war of the scale, in terms of the combined arms operations, which Russia is actually showing the world how it is done, United States never was in the same league. And when you look at the record, you know, just one war after another is failure after failure, because they absolutely confabulated military history. They learned the wrong lessons. And then again, I repeat it. I probably stated on your broadcasts many times. When you have your field manuals written by Wehrmacht generals who actually lost the war, you know, so instead of learning from the best, they learn from the guys, you know, who actually got, you know, Soviet flag hoisted over, over a Reichstag in 1945. And yet here we are, because it is, it's alienation away from whatever Russia is. And in the end, the hatred also. It's not only because some people say, you know, what this all kinds of their pseudo-academicians that, oh, Russia has never been conquered by the West, which is true. It's not only that. It's the fact that in terms of the what we observe right now, Russia, without really straining herself much, provided, again, unified idea for humanity. And this is conservative classic values, you know, conservative values idea, not conservative in American sense. We're talking about conservatism as human civilization developed it. And we're talking about man and a woman, family, you know, so things that which are oriented towards this end for the procreation of the nation. And guess what? It suddenly speaks volumes and transcends all borders. So there you go. They hate Russia for this too.
Do you think that we are at the end of an era of old-fashioned policies, Dick Cheney-type policies that had no respect for Russia, China, and even Europe? If you look at the Maidan, look at 2014, when it comes to these differences between the United States and Europe, she says, F Europe. You know, these people had no respect even for their allies. When it comes to Russia and China, it's getting worse. Are we at the beginning of a new era of policymakers in the United States?
I don't see how you can create those without completely overhauling the complete the system of the elite preparations. What we observe, especially in the Anglo-Saxon world, and you can quote me on that. If you have degree in political science, journalism, public relations, or from Oxford, from any Ivy League institutions, you know, be that, you know, England or United States, in 99 cases out of 10, you should view those degrees as disqualifying factors for any type of the real position for governance. And again, how do you govern the country, which is essentially became right now the United States, nothing more than the huge collection of corporations, each of the corporations owning her its you know, part of the Congress? So you cannot govern this, you know. It's you can produce some kind of the orders on the president's side. But other than that, you cannot pass any bill which works for the development of the country as a whole. Look what is happening with the border. Look what's happening. It's like the whole premise of the statehood is being completely annihilated by the combined West. They commit suicide. United States is committing suicide. It is for some narrower political and corporate interests. But it is a suicide. And essentially, these people are so stupid. It's not like people say, oh, they know what they do. No, they don't. I mean, they cannot calculate consequences. That is why they cannot also do not have plans B, C, what have you. They have only plan A. That's it. And the rest of it, they think that it will work out completely on its own. As the result, we observing the historic half millennium a crisis of the Western civilization from which it will not recover. It will kind of drop a couple of rungs, you know, on the ladder of their leading civilizations, and will stay there. Europeans will be poor. Americans are already getting poor. And it's going to get much worse if it's ever going to get better, you know. So there you go.
You know that she was very supportive of Zelensky. In recent issue, was there to support Zelensky over Zaluzhny. Do you think that could affect the Zelensky's position in Ukraine?
You know what? At this stage, it really doesn't matter. As I already stated, it was there a bunch of the scorpions in the glass jar. If need be, Victoria Nuland would have supported Hitler. Believe me, I'm not exaggerating. If it would have been Hitler, if that would be, you know, concentration camps in Russia for Russians, she would applaud it. So this is the type of people who they are, the neocons. And they play this decorum. They try to present themselves, you know, as civilized people, which they are not. But once in a while, it's kind of, you know, betrays itself. It's difficult to contain because it is driven by emotions and irrationality. And in terms of their internal play in Ukraine between Zelensky and Zaluzhny, who was today actually appointed the ambassador of Ukraine to London, which another, you know, the crap hole there where the MI6 will be giving him instructions. But the point is that it doesn't matter. The only idea behind this whole neocon geopolitical, you know, concept, which is, of course, completely detached from the reality, is to maintain Ukraine alive as a state in some form, because they think that actually they still can use it as a ram against Russia. But as we already know, they basically made a mistake, a miscalculation of the historic proportions, where it's something on the order with what was happening with obviously World War II and Hitler invading Soviet Union, when they state it will just, you know, kick the door and it will, you know, fly off the hinges and there you go. But then, of course, after the half a year of operations in the Soviet Union, suddenly they recognize they are in a death trap, and we know how it all ended. This is pretty much similar pattern. There are obviously some fundamental differences in terms of their although, again, you know what, we're looking at the millions of people which are killed, soldiers of the armed forces of Ukraine, which are killed and maimed and missing in action. We're looking at probably tens of thousands, lower tens of thousands of Russian servicemen killed and wounded. So when you look at this, those people don't have normal impediments, so to speak, to committing the evil acts. And this is why what we have, that the whole society is essentially imploding on itself. Because obviously, when you have inhibitors, you know, something which inhibits you from committing this suicide, yeah, they all have been removed. And as you correctly stated, by the ideology. And this ideology has no relation to reality whatsoever.
CNN reported that the situation at the front lines for Ukrainians is getting bad. Is the West providing Ukraine with the ammunition, or they're not interested anymore in doing that?
They provide some. It's for the mostly PR actions, you know, like to hit some Russian ship or bomb some, you know. France is trying to present themselves with their pipsqueaks militarily, but they try to, you know, provide some kind of support, you know. So it's all, a lot of it is PR, a lot of it is trying to hold on to power. No, it's over pretty much militarily. They can hit things. They still, obviously, Russian servicemen die, but they die. Their kill ratio at this stage, it's difficult to say, but from what we can observe right now, it's horrendous numbers. And again, there were released that there are more than 25,000 POWs. There would have been way more if they haven't been shot in the back. And what, even today, you can see some videos of their Ukrainian POWs and even their field medics. And they say, you know, one of the field medics says, we don't have like people anymore. And he literally, I quote him, you go there and they're like piles of bodies, literally piles, and hands, limbs, you know, all legs, everything just, you know, thrown around. So it's a terrifying picture. And when POWs who are taken today, for example, they say, we were, you know, Russian troops were the first ones who gave us water and fed us and provided medical, you know, service and first aid. So the situation is horrendous. But Russians are kind of, you know, they move slowly because they have, so to speak, to milk this cow properly, you know, not just do it too fast. And yeah, they obviously, Russian side tries to prevent military casualties on its side, you know, so that's pretty evident where it is all going. And now they say they are trying to evacuate Kharkov, from what I know. Does it mean something? I don't know. It's for Russian general staff to decide.
In 2023, the military aid to Ukraine was reduced by 40%. That it says a lot when it comes to this conflict and the support coming from the West to the conflict in Ukraine. And knowing that, and you see Macron coming out and getting radical, and nobody knows why, what's the reason behind this kind of strange behavior that he's committing right now. Do you think he's trying to save his political figure?
Well, that too, obviously. It always a factor. It is always a very large component in what they do. But again, I'm not a very big time specialist in the European politics, except obviously understanding it in general form, so to speak. Alistair Crook actually made a great elaboration on this matter, I believe, on Judge Napolitano when he spoke about the financial interest of France. France obviously scared absolutely to the, you know, to the bone with some kind of the leadership position of Germany. So because they always thought that, you know, obviously wrongly, that Germany would be the economic locomotive of Europe and France will be the one who will be speaking on the behalf of European Union in terms of the foreign policy and general politics. It's all delirium. It's economically, France is nowhere near Germany, but Germany is being deindustrialized. And guess what? You know what is happening right now with farmers. These people, they are committing suicide. And as the result, again, who is Macron? He is a boy. He is a bank teller. He is a boy with Oedipus complex. He married his mom, you know. So, and what can I say? You couldn't expect from these people any kind of professional statesmanship, which actually doesn't exist anymore in Europe. It doesn't exist in the United States either. But I mean, this is the level of the immaturity I never saw in my life. It's just like you wow, you know, you begin to scratch your head, not believing that what you observe. And of course, Macron obviously being, again, as I already stated, he is nothing more than the caretaker and bank boy, you know, bank teller. And then suddenly he is involved and embroiled in the complex geopolitical situation, which is the most complex geopolitical situation we had have since World War II. And France, well, what France? We know what happened to France in World War II. Today we are talking about the world of the filled with nuclear weapons. So, you know, for Russia to wipe the France off the face of the earth is just a matter of 15 minutes, you know. So this is the guy who doesn't understand where he is, what he is doing. Same goes for Scholz. Same goes pretty much for any European, you know, pipsqueaks. Look at London. It's a complete laughingstock, you know. They are capable only of terrorism, basically. You know, other than that, that's the extent of their capabilities.
Do you think that part of this kind of behavior, this radical behavior of Emmanuel Macron, is the problem that they're facing, they're dealing with in Africa?
He considers it a humiliation. And it also exposes the France as military paper tiger, really. I mean, it's pathetic, honestly. So, and yeah, Russia helped, obviously, Africans to kind of get rid of French, you know. So, but what can I say? It is the world where only stronger survives, because this is how the Western world wanted it. Now they have the huge guy, like Russia, is actually beating the crap out of them everywhere. So, and they are not happy for Macron and having Africa, you know, all those ambitious, you know, the grandeur, the folly, they still think themselves they're a great nation, you know, great power, you know, an imperial power. They are not, but, you know, so, and it's a part of the humiliation, obviously. It's also the very serious factor which defines his behavior.
We had the German parliament, the German chancellor, Olaf Scholz, talking about that they're not willing to send German troops. They're not willing to send Taurus missiles to Ukraine. At the same time, we have the German Bundeswehr talking about discussing the attack on the Crimean Bridge with German Taurus missiles. And How we can put these two images together? Who's in charge in Germany?
I don't really know, honestly. No, but well, okay, let's first, the great thing about this discussion of those German Bundeswehr officers is that it was obviously somehow recorded. Russians thing, it wasn't Russians who did this, because actually evidently that part of the communications was happening in Singapore from what I heard. But Russians think that these are Americans, you know, doing their thing and, you know, leaking it to Russians for a reason. What reasons? Again, listen, we have to understand, between the superpowers, it is a completely different type of the game. Germany is not a superpower. It never was. And what happens right now is that I think that Taurus missiles are already there. Okay, let me put it this way. I'm pretty sure Taurus missile, and again, people do not understand what's the difference. Taurus missile, Scout missile, Storm Shadow missile, they are all the same cruise missiles. The only thing about the Taurus missile allegedly that you cannot basically suppress it electronically, because it has primarily optical electronic sensors and it flies totally on inertial system, inertial navigation, which is very precise in its case. So yeah, maybe, but again, it's the standard target for Russian air defense. So I think so, it's already there and probably already have been used. I don't know. We obviously are not privy, all of us, to what is happening there, but I would think so that it's already there. And this is the fact which Germans, again, not all Germans, I do not want to paint the broad brush, you know, use the broad brush over all German nationality, but many Germans hate Russians. German elites abhor Russians. They will never forgive Russia for defeating them. And this basically pain, butthurt, historical butthurt is there, and it's to a very large extent drives what they are trying to do. So, but again, the other thing is, it is one thing to provide some kind of the weapons, totally another to put the uniformed troops there. That means what? Germany will cease to exist in 20 minutes, you know. So this is kind of, you know, this very blurred fine line between what NATO is trying to do, because they are like this, you know, schizophrenic. They live, you know, two different personalities. You know, they try to do one thing, then the other personality tells the, you know, not to do it. And but they are very much motivated to hurt Russians one way or another. And the more they try, the worse it becomes for them. And they still cannot wrap their brains around why this is happening. Because we're coming back to your initial question, because they are so, I mean, illiterate. They don't have real expertise.
When it comes to air defense system, how do you compare the United States and Russia?
Well, it's very easy. United States not even in the same universe as Russia. United States simply has nothing which is comparable to what Russian air defense uses, be it on the tactical level, which is, of course, all those famous Panzers and Thor M2s and things of this nature. And, of course, we're talking about all the systems such as Buk. And then we have now operational level systems such as the S-350 Vitis, and obviously all this S family, S-300, S-400, now S-500. And I mean, I can go on and on, because there's nothing which is even remotely comparable in the combined West, which also never expected the aerial threats, of which Vladimir Putin stated clearly in March 2018, it's becoming hypersonic. Good luck intercepting it. And we already saw that they cannot. And that pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
It seems that the United States is simply relying on their Air Force. And how capable is Air Force without air support?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely correct. The whole idea, the whole American idea of war is to have this powerful Air Force, or their, of course, naval component of it, which is the carrier-borne aviation, fly in and destroy whatever they have, you know. The problem, of course, with all that is if you take a look, especially when you look at the 1973 Arab-Israeli war, you will see yourself that actually Israeli aviation, which is basically offspring of the American idea about the aerial war, they lost truckload of the aircraft to the Egyptian air defense systems. The fact that the Egyptians have not been actually experts in warfare, it's one thing, but they had their nose blooded in this war. And then, of course, there was Vietnam. They lost to the SAMs, surface-to-air missiles, more than 850 aircraft. The others were shot down by other means, including the air forces of North Vietnam. And of course, they lost a horrendous number of something like 7,500 helicopters. But again, it's small arms fire and things of this nature. So the losses have been catastrophic, actually. And now suddenly they thought that, yeah, you can fly in and kill the so-called air defense of Iraq, which is not really air defense, ancient, you know. So, and they, oh my gosh, we're so cool. They never went against the competent air force since the times of Vietnam War. And again, Vietnamese air force was obviously not competitive because of the, you know, it wasn't as large, although it had its own aces. But then after that, they never encountered any air force. They never encountered real serious air defense. They never encountered the fact that United States rear, operational and strategic rear, could be basically destroyed, including airfields of this nature. And then suddenly they face this reality, and yeah, it's very corrupt. It's very, how to put it, amateurish approach to war, not understanding how the development of the air defense systems proceeded. And now you have the, well, plus, of course, they cannot even conceive that despite the fact that United States still fields the largest air force, it is by far not the most combat effective. It will not be in the very strict electronic warfare environment. And when, I'm sorry, that there's nothing even like something like R-37 missile, air-to-air missile, which is 400 kilometers range. And it's already scored number of hits on Ukrainian Air Force. United States simply has nothing like that. So, and when you look at this, technologically, I mean, it seems impressive, but it is not. I mean, it still can do a lot of damage, make no mistake. I mean, I'm not saying that, but it's not gonna win in the modern warfare.
Does Europe possess any sort of air defense system that can help the United States if something happens?
Well, they have systems. They have some, for example, NASAMS, it's, which is, again, whenever you stick actually your air-to-air missile, that's A-120 MRAM, you stick it onto the land platform and say, oh, this is the new air defense complex, it already tells you that some technological limitations exist there. French have some systems there. So, and there is IRIS, it's a short range. So they do not have anything which can stop the salvo of the cruise missiles, subsonic cruise missiles. And it has, they have nothing which can stop the salvo of the supersonic, let alone hypersonic missiles. So in this particular respect, NATO generally is naked. It's bare naked. It has no defense. And that is why they're panicking.
We know that John Bass is replacing Victoria Nuland. How do you find him? Is he a Russophobe?
Everybody in U.S. State Department are Russophobe. I don't know how. I know he was there in Afghanistan, but it doesn't really say too much about him. You know, people may sit and speculate there whatever they want, but I think so. He was just down the chain of command, and you know, she's gone. They will stick this guy in instead of her. So I don't know who he is, but again, whenever you're talking to State Department, you need to assume that most of those people, they are not Russophiles, to put it mildly. So, and especially those people who understand what is happening, and especially with Gaza. So there's a lot of things which the State Department has to do a lot of soul searching, you know.
It seems in Ukraine they're trying to train school kids to fly drones and attack Russia. Is that real or it's some sort of propaganda?
No, no, it's real. It's real. And plus they are now back to using, not back, I mean, it's sort of, they are using now the 10 kilometer long of fiber optics cables to fly drones. It's like the good old ATGMs, you know, anti-tank missiles, like the first ATGMs, which have been used by Egyptians in the Arab-Israeli conflict, which you would control them through the wire, you know, several kilometer wire. And the reason they're doing it, because obviously the Russians kind of solved the issue of the electronically suppressing the Ukrainian drones. So they use this. And they teach kids, yes, they do. So it's kind of, yeah, when you have the basically the population of your country and the catastrophic losses at the front, yeah, that's what they do. The time for Hitler Jugend, you know, Hitler Youth has come. And they will be teaching kids, they will be sending them, they're already sending them to the front lines. They, you know, they even sent mentally incapacitated people. There are many women right now, very many. So, and yeah, that's what a country, nation in the death throes does.
They got drones from Turkey. They got drones from all of Europe, from the United States, all together. How did you find the response coming from Russia?
Oh, it was very simple. Russia simply outproduced the whole Western world combined in producing the variety of drones, ranging from the frontline drones. Obviously, they buy their of the you know a commercial off the shelf drones, but I mean, if you look attentively at their combat drones, which are something like or loiter, let alone loitering munitions, such as Zala's Lancet and Scalpel's, which actually funny, Lancet is Scalpel, but Russians call one Lancet and another Scalpel, which is the latest one, and they are operating them now with the within the swarms and with the use of the elements of artificial intelligence. They can redistribute targets between the swarm. They can, you know, do their own detection, search and detection of targets. So it's a very advanced use. And of course, Russia produces just colossal. I believe in it produced 23,000 drones in 2023 alone. And not even the whole time. It's like half a year. It's just immense in number of drones. And some of them are extremely advanced. And when you look at, you saw yourself probably there, they were showing their assembly plants in Russia of Zala Corporation or other companies which produce obviously this geranium drones, which they still the Russia buys it from Iran for some reason. Well, and again, keep in mind, everything they know about Russia is wrong. All of them. They really have no clue. And so, and I'm talking about across the board, CIA, Pentagon, you know, let alone this pathetic academy, which is really pathetic. So, and as a result, they have to face now the situation that Russia not only outproduces combined West by several fold in drone technology, but the fact that Russia obviously uses very effective electronic countermeasures, which, as I already stated, proved to be very effective due to the fact that, as we know, they find now this, you know, drones with the 10 kilometer long optical electron, you know, fiber optical cable, but which also is very vulnerable for the elements. And many of those drones do not really operate properly because the cables tend to break and, you know, so be influenced by their nature. And there you go. It's everything you need to know. The only reason they do it because it's difficult to electronically suppress this type of drones, which you literally are controlled by the wire physically. So, but that's gonna be the solution to that will be found too anyway.
The Serbian president said that NATO at the end of the day will send troops to Ukraine. If NATO get involved in this conflict in Ukraine, is it possible for them to change the battlefield?
No. First, Vucic doesn't know what he's talking about because it is one thing to do the proxy thing, totally another when you actually put uniformed troops into what Russia already stated. First, those uniformed troops will be annihilated. Secondly, they don't have the force required to even stop Russia. Forget about defeating it. There's simply none. The United States doesn't have resources, and militarily, all those Germanys, France, and Italy's, and let alone UK, are pipsqueaks. They do not have force. What? They can put like what? 10 brigades? Or whatever they call it now, it's brigade combat teams on the battlefield, they will not last for a couple of weeks. They don't have their military industry capable to sustain this force. And then, of course, once there any uniform official, that means uniform as a representative of the state which puts their troops in there, are entering Ukraine, this country which dispatched it, it will be, as already stated, if it's going to be, which I don't think so, Germany will be doing. But you know what? I mean, France probably will get it, you know. And again, Russians will start conventionally. They will defeat this force, obviously. There is like 600,000 army standing in the rear right now, precisely for this scenario, if NATO decides to commit suicide. And then, of course, yeah, if they, with what? That's the whole point. And the United States cannot supply and sustain its own force if it decides to fight in Europe. Not to speak of the fact that it will not be able to commit the strategic lift, which is the preposition force, you know. Because if they do that, I mean, you know, Russia has navy, you know, and it's a good navy, especially nuclear power submarine component. So there you go. How are they going to fight? I don't know.